Welcome to Bartender at Large. I'm your host, Eric Castro. And as usual, we're joined by some of the biggest names in the industry. With me today, good friend and amazing bartender.
Bartender, yeah. Brand ambassador.
And Louise Marquis of Campari America.
Hi.
And Louise, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this episode because this episode is going to be a little bit different than some of the other ones we've done. This episode, we're actually going to go over like our strategies and techniques that we both use in our lives for that allow us to kind of, you know, diversify and work on so many cool different projects. Because, you know, I'm sure some of the questions you ask is sometimes people, they look on your Instagram and they see you're in Milan one day and they look and then you're like giving a seminar in San Francisco like 18 hours later. You're like, did she post these as they were live?
I actually went back in time. Yeah, I went back in time to do it. Yeah.
You know, and people can't figure out exactly how you're doing it. You know, so it's like, if you go into this, I remember I became a brand ambassador for 2 years, I went in with no plan. It just like kicked my ass. Yeah. I was useless to anybody just because, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. Then, like, you know, maybe about 6 months in, I was like, okay, cool. I got to start having, like, a plan and a strategy and really, really, like, you know, making the most effective use of my time. Mm-hmm. Then now where I'm at, you know, it's like, you know, two bars, one bar on each coast. I do some consulting. You know, obviously we have the podcast and the film and, you know, all these, like, various projects. And it's like, I know if I didn't have, like, a strict ritual that I stuck to, I would go insane.
You find it over time. And I mean, I think also part of it is that you can't know what you don't know, right? So you sort of watch these people doing their thing and you know what it looks like from the outside. Mm-hmm. And then when your life picks up speed, all of a sudden you realize that you're sort of in the same loop they're in, but you didn't notice that you got there, right? So I think for me, a lot of the times I would listen to people talk about stuff over the years, and as I would hit these moments or these walls, I'd go, oh, that's why they do that thing. And then I'd pick it up and start doing it myself or figure out my solution to the problem, because it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And no one tells you to slow down.
No.
Everyone just suggests maybe you speed up, right? So it's like, it's not ever going to slow down.
And people, they'll book you know, especially when you work for a brand, they'll book you like back-to-back events. Like, oh, hey, you can do 3 trainings in 3 days and like, all different parts of the country,
and right? Just three different time zones. And my fault, and I think our fault as bartenders in general, is that we get into this business a lot because we like to please people.
Yes.
And we like to say yes, and we like to be of service. Mm-hmm. And also, I think we all live in this. I mean, this is something I care a lot about. Is I think as people from the service industry, we live in a paradigm where you could get fired very quickly.
Yeah.
You know that feeling of like, my drop wasn't the right number. Oh my God, I broke 5 glasses.
Oh, dude, my bake was 10 bucks under.
Yeah, like,
man.
Oh my God, like I'm going to get fired because when you work in restaurants and bars, like people just turn over so fast.
Yeah.
And then you transition to a job and you might not realize that company spent $50,000 to find you.
Yeah.
Just to find you, not even to hire you. So you're not going to get fired. But there's this sense of, in those first like 6 months, a year, 2 years, for me it took like 4 years, of realizing you're not going to get fired and that this is something you're going to need to like, and you need to sustain it.
Yeah.
And that's, so figuring that out over the last 4 years for me has been really valuable, of like, okay, I'm here, I'm doing this thing, I can sort of relax and be confident, and then what do I need to be able to do this every day?
Do you have like any rules in place for yourself? Like for
me,
for instance,
I do.
Two of the rules I have now, and I've only instituted more recently, but it's like they brought me so much sanity in my life. I don't do any admin after 8 p.m.
Oh, that's a good one.
And I don't do any admin on Sundays. Because it's just like, I find myself, what ends up happening is like, you're right, because you end up thinking like, what ends up happening is like, you're like, oh, I really got to get that proposal out today. Oh, I'm going to go on Instagram for a minute. Oh, what's going on in the news now? Yeah. And then you kind of, you're at your laptop, but you're not really getting any work done.
Your day's gone.
And then next thing you know, it's like 9:30 at night. You're like, oh shit, I told him I'd get it out today. And then you're like, you know, when you should be getting ready for bed and kind of, you know, like mellowing out, you're actually just typing up this like 4-page proposal or something and sending it off. And it's like, what I find now is that by giving myself a hard cutoff, when like 6:45 rolls around, I'm like, oh shit, I have to get that done by 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it's like, then I'll just jam it out and crank it out and do whatever I have to do by 8 and then I'm done.
Well, and because you're only valuable if you're alive, right? Like you're only valuable if you're healthy and working and mentally stable and sane, right? So like you think you have to build these things for yourself where you're like, okay, I'm going to give myself this arbitrary limit because this is the tool I need to be successful. I have all sorts of rules. I mean, I try not to work on weekends unless I'm traveling or working for
it's like
work.
An activation,
Like I don't read email. I don't look at my phone. Like I really... Like desperately.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah. And the way my email set up on my phone is I have to log in every time I see my email. So it's not like I can just, nothing pops up.
Oh, that's really smart.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But sometimes I get anxiety about opening the email.
Yeah, I know, right?
So then I also have to work through that. But like, I can't, it's not automatic. Yeah. It doesn't just, it's not like getting a text. Mm-hmm. So I really try on the weekends to not. And then I generally turn it off around 6 or 7, but I wake up and I start working at 9. So I tend to work like a 9 to 6, 9 to 7, 9 to 8, depending on the day. And then I work out every morning, pretty much. Yeah. So like that's a whole nother part of like I exercise. I maybe a year and a half ago got very committed to making sure I stayed physically healthy.
Yeah, that's important. That's important.
I used to get sick every 3 months. Every 3 months consistently. I would just be like knocked out and I just didn't want that anymore. And I also felt like overweight and I felt gross and I didn't, you know, I just didn't like it. And I had to finally just like advocate for myself and decide.
Yeah, that's right. And then you make that time in your morning. Like, so I have this thing, I have like my morning ritual that I like stick to.
What do you do?
You know, essentially it's like what I do is like, it sounds pretty goofy, but it keeps my life organized. Cause I find what happens is like, I used to do this. I used to like roll out of bed. And then I would like check my email, and then it's like, oh crap,
something happens. It's over something the second happens. You look at your email.
And then
it's
you look your email, and then you're running around, and you're like, you're just like putting out fires from the minute you wake up. So it's like, as soon as you're up, you feel like you're behind. You're like, oh crap, now I got to get in the shower and like have a cup of coffee, and you're just like, you're playing catch up, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, when I decide, I'm like, no, I don't even look at that anymore.
Good,
like what I do, I wake up, have a glass of water.
Okay, what's in your water though?
My wife puts lemon in it. She puts lemon in it, right?
So like, I have. But this is like the thing,
this
right?
This is the thing. This is the ritual. I'll tell you guys.
Tell me about it.
So I wake up. I go, I don't lay in bed anymore unless it's like, you know, Sunday. Sunday is the day I just fuck off. But, you know, I go straight to the kitchen, have a glass of water with lemon in it.
Okay.
Hop in the shower.
Okay.
Like, so essentially, I'm in the shower within like 2 minutes of waking up.
Wow.
You know?
Okay.
I'm in the shower.
You don't look at your phone.
No, phone is not even in the mix yet.
Okay.
I get, you know, without even looking at it. Then I, you know, I have a cup of coffee, have breakfast, whatever that happens to be. Then I stretch, you know, like I have to stretch. Well, because I'm getting over some.
Tell me. Tell
I'm getting over
stretch.
Some injuries because I, you know, I had like tendonitis in my ankle and like tendonitis in my elbows. I'm just,
bartender.
You know, 16 years of bartending stuff. It's like it kind of acts up if I don't get on top of it. So I find if I'm proactive about it, like it doesn't really bother me. So, you know, I do all my stretches. You know, then I, you know, either like I work on myself. So it's like whether it's like, you know, like 10 minutes of meditating or just like, you know, just whatever, right?
Okay,
doing a little bit of writing or whatever,
For the folks at home. So what stretches do you do for your tendonitis? Like what's helpful?
Well, it's tough because a lot of people are listening to this on SoundCloud or iTunes and they can't see it.
But
so
you can describe
I'll do,
it,
like, I don't always know the names of them. So I'll do some planks for my psoas. I'll do like stretches for my calves and my Achilles tendon and also my arms.
Okay.
So like, I know all these stretches have names, like yoga names. I don't know what they are.
Maybe we can do like a supplement stretch, stretch it out with Castro session.
That'll be my new series, right?
Okay. And then your Betterment, do you use an app for meditation?
I use Headspace. I use Headspace. Okay. I do that about 5 days a week.
You like it?
Yeah, I really like it actually.
Like
it's really cool. Yeah, 10, 15 minutes, depending on my mood. Then I'll do like, you know, like, I don't know, either like a little bit of Spanish or something with my, what's the name of that app?
Duolingo.
My Spanish is really good, but like my vocabulary isn't as good as it should be. So I'll like go through and I'll be doing like the advanced adjectives and stuff, right?
Okay.
And then by now I haven't even been awake that long still, right?
Right.
But I've kind of like, my day's like, I've already got a lot done. Like a lot has been taken off my checklist.
Sure.
Then at this point, you know, I'll sit down with my wife and we'll kind of look at my schedule for the day. I'm like, okay, what do I got to get done today? Blah, blah, blah. So like you kind of go into it with a battle plan and you start checking stuff off as you go.
Okay.
And then I find it's like, by just going through with that, it's like I have my day, like already logged. I've already started kicking the day's ass from the beginning.
Yeah.
So then, like, as soon as I get an email, like, then I'll do whatever creative I have to get done for the day first.
Okay.
Like if I'm you know writing something or to finish an article or something, I'll get that done because then it's like I'm on my time. And by now it's still pretty early in the morning, so then I'll start actually you know going through my emails and ticking stuff
then
off.
Then you look at your phone.
I find what happens is like, if you get yourself in the habit of putting other people's priorities before yours, you just end up getting this time suck. And I feel like a lot of people, they mix up emails with productivity.
They like to
email each other back and forth to make themselves feel like they're doing something, but they're really not doing anything. You're like, this email has been going on for like, there's like 40 entries in it. It's just like, good idea. I like the idea too. Good idea. I like it. And it's like.
Yeah. And there's a sense, like you're saying, of like emailing being working, but that's actually like, like not. Like email is a tool that helps you do some of your work. Mm-hmm. But for me, a lot of the time I get stuck in this email jam and then I actually don't have the time to do my actual work.
Yeah.
And I'll get really frustrated. So I think there is times when you just turn off your email, you set your phone aside and you just, I'll even turn off Wi-Fi and just totally focus in on the thing I need to focus on.
That's super smart.
In order to get it done.
I read this really cool interview with Stephen King, and you know, obviously a super prolific actor, right? Great, you know, great author.
Right?
What did I say?
Actor.
An actor, maybe actor too, right?
Not a great
but
actor.
But writer, sorry, I got, you know, misspoke. But you know, he talks about how when he writes, he like writes in a room with like no phone, no Wi-Fi, no anything.
No.
And it's just like, that's how he gets his work done, because these constant interruptions like snap you out of like your zone, you know?
So well, yeah, and that's his job, and he needs to advocate for himself. And that's something I keep talking about with bartenders and with brand people is you need to take care of you and set yourself up for success before anyone else, you know, like no one else knows the best way for you. You need to figure this out, and you need to set time aside to get your work done. Mm-hmm. It's really stressful otherwise.
Yeah,
because everyone's pulling you in a million directions, and there's a million places you could go and feel more needed immediately. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like I could go put out that fire immediately and I could feel good about that,
but it's actually
not, you'd feel really useful, but it's actually not, this is if my boss listens to this, she's going to laugh, but like, it's actually not the most effective, because you actually have to get your work done and like finish your part of the thing you committed to. It's really tricky. Okay. So you do all this stuff, like these little pieces, but then your wife is also like, she's your wife and she's also like your business
partner.
She's
like my manager.
She's like, okay. Which is really helpful. People don't have that, you know? So how does she help you like construct your day, or how does she help you?
Essentially everything we do together.
That's
so,
amazing.
She's, you know, when we record these episodes, she's like, you know, running the cameras and checking the audio and all that. And yeah, we do everything together. So she's every bit as involved with running the businesses and everything as much as I am. So I couldn't do any of this stuff without her. And that is really important. I would say, you know, and even if she's not necessarily involved, you know, with hand to hand, she's like supportive of me doing that. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean supportive necessarily even like a functional set, but rather just like, you know, oh, Eric, you're going to go to, you know, San Antonio Cocktail Classic for 3 days to work and do some events. Like, go take care of that, you know. And, you know, because I've known people who like their boyfriend isn't supportive of them.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really
and it's
tough.
Like, you know, or girlfriends aren't supportive of them. They're like, oh, hey, so I'm going to go to New Orleans for 4 days or 5 days. And I'm going to be working for the entire 5 days. And they're just like, oh, really? Oh, with your little boyfriends and girlfriends and blah, blah. And you're just like,
yeah.
And you're like, hey, this person is trying to advance their career. So it's like, you know, if you find someone like that who's like essentially trying to restrict your business opportunities, that's like a conversation you need to have with them, you know?
Yeah.
And then that's a little different than what we were talking about, but it is important.
No, I think, but it is part of your daily routine. It is part of the things that you set up for yourself so that you can do your job. And I've been thinking about this a lot recently because I'm single, and but you have to build structures for yourself of support, and that you need to have people that support you in whatever way that is, and people you can lean on, people that are cheering for you and rooting for you and making sure that your world is those people. Because if people in your world don't understand what you're doing, they don't get it, they're not supportive, it's going to be really hard to keep doing this. You know, if people don't think this is a real job, or they're waiting for you to quit, or they don't want you to go to the party because they don't understand that Tails is like a constructive business opportunity.
Yeah. It's networking, and really, in a way, it sounds kind of messed up, but these people are, in a way, they're, like, sabotaging your career.
Yeah,
and I don't think they about it like that, but they kind of are. And it's like, I knew a guy once who, like, the girl he was dating, like, wouldn't let him go to Tails to work these events, and it's like, they were going to pay him a lot of money.
Yeah.
And she was just, like, freaking out about it. And it's not just girlfriends. I mean, I see it's just as often as boyfriends, if not more.
Oh,
you know, if not more, because it's like, wait, you're going to hang out with all these like really like handsome bartenders, and it's like, no, like get past that. It's work, work. So it is a real, it is a pain. I think these people, without seeing it, they are like sabotaging someone's career.
And so it's important to recognize. Like I talk a lot about creating a board for yourself. I don't know if I talked about this on the last one.
Let's talk
about
my
God, I'm so obsessed with this idea. Okay. And this is definitely something like I'm buying an apartment right now. So this is like a very
congrats,
big thank
congrats.
You very much. Thank you. I mean, we'll see. I have the contract in my bag. But the many steps that got me to a place where I could possibly do that as a single woman living in New York City is kind of insane. Like all the stuff that had to conspire to support me in doing that. And I talk a lot about having a board, right? So like every business has a board, right?
Yeah.
And there's people that sit on the board, and a board's job is to steer the business in the best direction for the business. Mm-hmm. And people are in it for their own own personal, right? People want their own money back, but really they want the board. They want the.
So you have like an executive committee. You have like 8 people that sit at a board.
So I have a board. So I have a board. So yeah, and the board's purpose is to make sure the business is as successful as possible, and they have a vested interest in that business being successful. So I joke that
in my mind, I'm just thinking of that scene from Kill Bill 2 with where Orinishi like chops off all those dudes' heads at that like board meeting.
Okay, I don't chop anyone's heads off. No, I love my board. Okay. But it's this idea of and sometimes when I even close my eyes, I think about my board and I think about who's sitting there and who has a vested interest in my success.
Yeah.
And the people I have friends, and then there's board members, and they're different. Some people are just friends and they're great and I love my friendships, and then there's a few friendships that are like board level friendships of like, I'm going to advise you to do this. I people that I trust.
That's and actually really smart.
There's also family members that I trust so I have someone who can talk to me about my money. I have someone who talks to me about relationships. I have someone that guides me in my career decisions. Jerry Ruvo is the chairman of our Campari board, and he's also on my personal board. Like he's the chairman of Ann Louise's board as well. And so he's very vested in my career. And
that's really
that
smart. I've never heard about anybody putting it like that. But when you put it in those words, it makes sense where you actually have, essentially you have like experts that are close to you that you can like seek for counsel.
Yeah, and they're mentors. Like they're mentors or they're experts or they're people I admire and they're just people that want nothing but the best for me and have supported me in getting somewhere. And I sort of imagine them all as like this cocoon of support and safety as I move throughout the world. And I think often we feel very alone, especially I travel 90% of the time. I'm on the road. I'm in a suitcase. I feel very lonely and alone.
Yeah, it's easy
so
to do
much.
That.
But because I have this board and I have these people and these connections, that's also part of my daily ritual, I don't ever actually feel lonely.
Yeah.
I'm just alone. I feel alone, but it's different. And I feel like having that support is such an important part of my sanity. And I notice brand ambassadors who don't have that, who do feel alone or don't feel connected, but really hard time.
And, you know, I don't even think that that's necessarily a symptom of being a brand ambassador, though it definitely is exasperated under those circumstances where you travel by yourself a lot. I think it says a lot about where we're at in our society right now, where it's like no one talks anymore. It's all like so much of it's text. So like one of my New Year's resolutions for this year was to talk on the phone more.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's been awesome. It's just like, you know, someone I'll just talk with a bartender friend of mine who like, I never see very often. I'll just like call them or they'll call me. Cause like now like a few people know and it's so we'll just talk and we'll talk on the phone for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And it's just like really nice to like hear someone's voice and have a meaningful conversation rather than just like click like on their comment.
So, okay, this is a big part of my daily ritual, where since we're kind of going back to that theme all the time. So I joke that I have like a mobile coffee shop, like my mobile Cheers or like my Central Perk, and that I have these people in my mobile coffee shop. And I just, because I see them, I talk to them every day.
That's a good business plan. Guys out there, don't steal her mobile coffee shop.
Well, I mean, I think some people treat Facebook like that or Instagram like that, but I actually treat it like I connect with these people almost every day. So I'm on a text chain with 2 people that I talk to all day, every day, that I'm just in constant contact with. And then I also call them as much as I can so that we're just like in contact. It's just the stupid stuff that's happening in our lives, but at least we're like, we know what's happening. And there are 2 people that are very skilled at doing that. Some people hate being on the phone, right? Some people hate it.
Which
and you
is
can't,
weird.
Like, it's just whatever. It's
and
fine.
Then there are the people who always complain about, like, oh, like, no one cares about me and I'm so lonely. And it's like
you don't like to talk on
the
phone.
You're isolating yourself. The human condition, the human is not meant to be isolated.
And it's really easy to do that. And so I kind of force myself all the time to connect with them. And then I also have a friend I talk to every day on the phone. And I just, if it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, sometimes it's an hour, the person, they make me laugh so hard and we have a great time. And it's just this moment of feeling connected.
Yes.
In an otherwise like very stressful, and it's never about work.
Yeah,
ever.
Cool. You're
never.
Better,
I mean, sometimes it's like industry frustrations or whatever, you're but like, it's not
you
about
see what
work.
That asshole posted on Facebook.
and then I have standing phone dates with certain. Like I talk to my aunt every Friday.
Yeah.
That's cool. That was her birthday present 2-3 years ago. I said, "What do you want?" And she said, "I want to talk to you every week." And it's been great, and it makes me feel connected to my family. So even as much as things are going around, I know that there's going to be these moments of like
you're going grounded.
To talk to her on Friday. And that to me is like as much as part of my ritual as waking up and working out immediately when I wake up, as putting my toppings on my cereal. Oh, I brought my toppings to show you.
Yeah, let's see her.
Okay,
I made her bring them because I told her I didn't believe her.
Shut up!
I'm just kidding.
No, you did it. Okay.
But by the way, do you notice that we're wearing matching shirts?
Twinsies.
This is really cool, right? It was total coincidence. I think it was fate.
Also, I'm down to my last shirt.
Yeah, that's really what it is. It's laundry day.
It's laundry. Okay, so
it's
Like,
oh, I gotta wear this.
We were talking about rituals, and you were talking about yours, and so here's some of mine. So, okay, one of the things I do is I travel with Tupperware in my backpack.
Yeah.
And I travel with toppings. So I'm vegetarian.
Yes.
And I don't know if you know this, but traveling as a vegetarian can be really stressful.
Yes.
So these are, it's just like a blend of chia and flax seeds and pepitas and cacao and almonds. Mm. And I don't know. So I put it.
I'm going to make sure I chew it in the mic like, really loud.
Yeah, chew like. So I put this on my oatmeal every morning. So
yeah.
That's like a consistency of like, no matter what the oatmeal's like, my toppings are always the same. And it's really nutrient dense food for me because I'm a vegetarian.
Yes.
I recommend it highly.
Also, I like that you eat oatmeal in the morning because when you're on the road, it's really easy to just, you know, you're eating at airports. You're
oh my God.
At really nice restaurants and bars. So everything's like fried and greasy. So.
That oatmeal
in the morning like kind of keeps you like stable.
I have two eggs and oatmeal, like a little bit of eggs, a little bit of oatmeal always. And you know, here's the thing, and I tell new brand ambassadors, this is like my first thing, is like there will always be more drinks.
Yeah.
There will always be more food. If you're hungry, like don't worry. Like you don't,
like,
we come from such
not
a place.
Running out of booze.
No, we're not running out. Like it's gonna be here. It's all free. Like it's gonna be fine. And even if it costs money, you have money. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And that I think we come from such a culture of scarcity, especially like when you're making
money
and you're
like,
a bartender and you're eating over a trash can and like you're just right like fast.
Like, I got like 6 minutes to like slam down this small pizza.
Right,
and it's like,
right, and this like crappy food that I got. Like we don't. You don't have to do that. And I don't think you have to do that when you're a bartender, but you really don't have to do it once you move into brand work. Is like, there's food available. There's food in the airport. There's food at the hotel. Like,
there's food in your Tupperware
there's
container.
There's food in my Tupperware container. I wouldn't just eat this on its own. But sometimes I just put it on yogurt. Like,
you can get the little Starbucks airport.
Just mm-hmm. I do that. Mm-hmm. So then the other thing I travel with is a little therapy ball.
It's also good if you see any dogs, you can
Yeah, and then you can also play catch. The dog doesn't want
to. So let me see this little therapy ball.
Okay,
so what is this guy?
So this is a little therapy ball. I bought it at Whole Foods. I actually constantly give them away. Yeah.
Oh,
look
so
at
you rub
that.
It on your joints and stuff?
So you rub it. So basically, I work out my feet, and you open up your joints and your fascia and your feet.
Oh, this is on your nasty feet?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
My feet are perfect, okay?
See, now everybody out there is going to think I have a foot fetish or something. Now I got to act appropriately, discuss it. Oh, gross. It was on someone's feet.
Comments, and then someone's going to be mad at you for saying bad things about foot fetishes.
I know, right?
You can't win.
Not saying if any of you guys do have a foot fetish, that's totally cool.
I'm not
judging.
That's fine. The point is that this is really great for rolling out your feet at the end of your day, rolling out your, basically like
in
your butt. Oh my God, you got to. It's great.
These glutes are good.
Your glutes. Roll out your glutes.
I have very particular listeners and they'll be offended by kind of talk.
You can roll out your gluteus maximus and minimus as well as your piriformis with this little guy. And it's really, really great. And what you want, like you can get any ball, but you want like a hard, so people use golf balls or lacrosse balls. This is from Whole Foods. But just you want something hard. So it really gives you resistance. So I travel with that, and like if my back starts hurting on a plane, I'll put it behind my back and
just
roll it across. What else did I bring? Let's see. I brought vitamins. I travel with vitamins.
That's a good call.
Because I was getting tired and I needed vitamins. Let's see, what else did I bring?
Mega food ones. These are good.
This is the best face mask in the whole world. This is a Tempur-Pedic face mask.
Oh, what?
Yeah. And so it like smushes.
They don't make just mattresses?
No. And so it like smushes to your face and blocks out all the. Wait, actually, like, can you try it on?
Yeah.
You can try it on. Sorry, it's a little bit dusty because it's been in my bag.
So for those of you guys who are just listening on SoundCloud or iTunes, I just want to let you know that like wearing like a little. It looks like a Green Arrow mask, except with no slits. So I can't really see out.
No, but it's really nice, right? It's like cozy.
Yeah, it feels really cozy on my head.
Yeah.
See, I don't like having this on because I feel like you're doing something funny on the other side.
I wasn't doing anything. So, and then I always travel with a good book. That's also part of it. It's like sometimes I just need to turn off my brain and not be thinking about. I think for me, my default is to always think about work. Mm-hmm. And so I had to train myself to not think about work. And that actually took me like the better part of last year was just trying to not sometimes focus too much. And so I'm just started trying to read more. So I'm reading more fiction. I know you've been reading a lot.
I read a lot. One of my other rules is I read every night before bed.
Oh.
The only time I ever
done
this is if I'm like, if it was a bender, right?
Yeah.
Every once in a while you have that night where I'm like, and even then I'll try, but I've learned not to because now I won't remember anything. I won't retain anything I read. So I wake up the next day and I'm like,
this?
I read 10 pages. None of this rings any bells. But otherwise, like I generally read about at least 10 minutes every night.
Okay.
But it's generally probably more like almost an hour.
And what are you reading? Are you reading like...
Oh, I read everything, pretty much everything. Like I have, I'm typically reading about 2 or 3 books at once. But as long as they're on different topics, I can do it. Right now I'm reading this book called The Rap Yearbook.
Okay.
Which is really cool.
What's it called?
It's called The Rap Yearbook.
Rap Yearbook.
The Rap Yearbook. I forget the author's name. But essentially what it is, it's like this guy goes back to like 1979, mm-hmm. you know, and then he picks like the most important rap song from each year.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, and it kind of tells the story of mm-hmm. rap in that year and how it evolved.
Yeah, and he's like, this isn't the best song of the year, but it's the most important. Sometimes the best and the most important are the same song, but not always.
Okay.
And he kind of just talks about how, like, why, you know, a certain song was so important. Mm-hmm. And then somebody writes a rebuttal and then says, like, what other song they thought.
Oh, interesting.
And it's really cool. You know, I love rap music. I've loved, you know, hip-hop's played a big, important part of my life since I was a youth.
Okay.
And so I like just reading that and, like, getting the context, the historical context of it. And also the writer's super clever, really witty writer. Then another one, the second book I'm reading, the only reason I'm reading two right now is because the other one's, like, 1,000 pages long. So it's I'm reading The Fall of the Third Reich by Richard J. Evans, which is, like, about, you know, World War II and Nazis and stuff. So it's like, it's a really heavy topic. So it's like, but I like reading. I think it's important for people to read about history to just keep in mind, like, how terrible things were at one stage mm-hmm. and how, you know, no one's immune from those things ever happening again.
Yeah.
So it's important to kind of read about.
Do you listen to hardcore history?
No, but everybody keeps asking if I should or telling me about
it. You should, for sure. Yeah. I mean, if this is your thing, he's great and he really breaks down the situations and he's such a good storyteller and it's just very deeply investigated.
Yeah, each episode is like, they can be like 4 hours long or something, right?
Yeah, they're really long. So it's not like a normal podcast. It's like it's almost like an audiobook.
Yeah.
You just sort of commit to like, okay, I'm going to do this for the next week. Like, this is what I'm going to listen to this week.
That's cool. You know, cause I'm on airplanes a lot. I think I always thought it was on YouTube, but it's a podcast too.
You can get it on iTunes or whatever.
I'll get on iTunes then, and I'll listen to it on my next flight.
Yeah.
Because everyone, you're like the third or fourth person recently to tell me I should listen to that.
Well, you're reading this book about the fall of the third. I mean,
it's actually a three-parter. So I read the first book, the second book, Richard Davis. His books are so good. Like, by the time I'm done with this book, I'm going to be a solid, like, 3,400 pages into, like, knowing about, like, you know, Nazi Germany.
And like a sophomore-level history major.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Right? Well, his writing's really good. His writing's really good. He like manages to condense a lot of information in a really concise format.
Well, and how does that help you? Like, that's part of your ritual. How does the reading help you?
It helps expand my horizons, and it keeps me humble, in the sense that it keeps me remembering my place in the world. Where it's like the world is not about me. The world has existed far before me. It'll last long after I'm gone.
Yeah.
So I think it's really easy for us to become characters of our own story in our own minds.
Oh,
and we create this narrative where we're this all-important creature and like the world functions, you know, where we're like the narrator in our story, where it's like the world's so much bigger than that. And it's important to keep you humble and just remind you that we are but a small speck in the universe, you know? And the reason why I think being humble is so important as a bartender, and guys, this is an important point to drive home, is if you're not humble as a bartender, if anyone who's providing service, it's really difficult.
Ambassador.
It's really difficult to provide service to people if you think you're better than them.
Oh.
Because now you're patronizing them. You're patronizing them rather than providing service. So it's like, it's really important to make sure that to stay humble and keep the proper frame of mind and realize that great service is a gift. It's a gift that you give these people. And it's something that you can offer them. If the second you think you're better than them or you think you're better than some people, like, it's only going to hurt you because it's going to put you at a difficult perspective to give good service.
And especially when you transition to being a brand ambassador, it's real tough because you're entering a world where no one knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And you'll be the only person at your company who understands the spec for a 50-50 martini, right? And you'll have to go in and explain, like, this is why it's called a 50-50, and this is why it's called an old-fashioned, or this is what a margarita is. And there's these, it really often, you're pulling back to the basics as a brand ambassador. You're not, as much as you are the voice of that brand, you're really actually speaking on the broadest level possible. You very rarely get to get nerdy. Like, I don't get nerdy anymore.
No.
I did bar five. I got to get nerdy. It was so fun for me. But most of the time, I'm actually talking in like very fundamental building blocks. And you have to have compassion for everyone.
Yes.
that because your job is to bring this brand to people wherever they are, at whatever level they're at.
Also, a big ego will slow you down because your ego is like it's a poison that tells you you're good enough. And it's like, as soon as you feel like, oh, I'm good enough, I don't have to learn anymore. I don't have to like, that's when you become that slow descent into like irrelevancy.
I loved that post. Right? That post was so good.
But it's important,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
By the way, she's talking about posts. That's on my blog. It's at bartenderlarge.com/news. It's on there, right?
It was a very Eric Castro, like, you hadn't come out with one like that in a while. And it was like a good zinger.
And it's important. And it's just like, you know, that is, I wrote that during my creative time. It took me like, I wrote it like 15 minutes because it was just I think it was just sitting in my brain. I had to come out. And, you know, it's just really important to like, as soon as you start thinking your ego starts getting big, it's like, it's a crutch. It'll start to slow you down because you think like, oh, I've already worked hard enough. Oh, I don't need to read that cocktail book, that new book about Sherry. I already know enough. So it starts to like, it's a drug and it's intoxicating because it tells you that you're great.
And I want to say though, there's a difference between ego and confidence.
Yes.
And I talk to people, a lot of people. I talk to the best bartenders in the country, and I would say maybe in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And there, a lot of them are like, "Oh no, I'll never think I'm good at this, because I don't want to jinx it, right?"
Yeah.
And I said maybe this really specific conversation. I was like, maybe you could allow that you are respected and loved at what you do, and you could maybe like trust that. And he was like, "No."
Yeah.
Right. Like, but there's. Because he's so scared of the ego.
It's like confidence versus arrogance.
Right. So I think you can be confident, and we need people who are confident. We need people who are capable and assertive and strong. But that arrogance is the problem.
Arrogance stems from weakness, and confidence comes from strength.
Right. And so we want the strength.
And they look so
similar. And they look so similar when you're young and you're sort of looking out. And sometimes it's easier to imitate arrogance than it is to imitate confidence. Because confidence comes from a very real, deep place that takes a lot of work to get to.
I know.
Like personal therapy, like really working through your stuff. And arrogance is pretty easy because it's a like you're saying, it comes from fear. It's from a defense mechanism, and it's really easy to avoid. And so, but we need more confident people.
Yes.
I would love, like, please.
Yeah, right.
I want everyone to feel confident and excited because I think as I look for brand ambassadors and we're looking to hire people, there's a lack of confidence and there's this fear, and it either comes out as arrogance or it comes out as ineptitude. And we can't work with either of that.
Yep.
So that's something I definitely would like to see more of is I don't know how I got on this topic, but you were talking about being humble and wanting people to really find their power and understand their power. Cause I think we live in this, especially when you come from the bar, this culture of fear so often.
Yeah. And it is, the road to like, arrogance is very easy because some people are like, oh, if I just like fake confidence and like, just like act really and talk really big and grandiose, everyone will think I'm this like master mixologist. Like, first off, don't call yourself that.
Don't call yourself that. I mean, there is a fake it till you make it. And I think that is part of like definitely part of my daily routine is like convincing myself that I know what I'm doing. Like every day I taught myself like, you got this. You can do this. This is your job. People hired you to do it. Because I think that I always am going to have imposter syndrome, but I think it's something I work on like every day, and there's little ways you can
and it's
do
like
it.
the more you learn about something, the more you realize you don't know anything. So it's
nothing.
Like, you like
nothing.
Feel like, you know, you know, like last year or a couple years ago, I was like, you know, I don't know enough about American whiskey. So I read like three books in a row on like American whiskey and bourbon. And by the time I was done, I was like, man, I don't know that much about whiskey. Like I like people, you know, have paid to see me like to sit down and have me talk about it for 2 hours. And like I still feel like I'm like, you know, I really should know more mash bills.
Oh my god.
Off the top of my head, I only know a handful. I should know them all.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like as the more you get into it, and that's a cool thing. It just I mean, think about how depressing this industry would be if you could learn everything.
Well, that's
if it was finite, it would suck.
Right. And that's what's so great about this industry in a way, is you can get in with a little bit of knowledge, right? And that there's an opportunity and you don't need to go to college and you don't need to, right? There are these opportunities where you don't need the financial barrier. So that's great. But then also, nothing's more dangerous than a little bit of knowledge, right? And these people that show up and they know like 5 classic specs and they know how to do 4 riffs and then they're like somehow running a bar program. Mm-hmm. So it can also be dangerous. But I think if that's when you stop learning, then that's the problem. Like I just did bar 5 because I was like, I need to keep learning and I need it actually structured into my work life because my work life's so crazy. Yeah. And it was great. I learned so much. I spent a week I spent like six weeks.
I still haven't done it.
You haven't done it?
No, I still haven't.
Oh my God.
I always feel bad because the guys always give me grief about it because I've like almost done like 2 or 3 times. So I need to do it. Yeah, I think I'm going to do it this coming year.
It's really good to just dive in.
Yeah, the Bar 5 Day, by the way, guys, is a program put together by Steve Olson, Dave Wondrich, Dale DeGroff,
Doug Frost,
you know, some of the greatest minds, and Paul Packle, some of the greatest minds and tasters in the spirits industry. They have this 5 day event that happens every year in January. Yeah. And it's like you just it's like boot camp for bartenders and spirits professionals. And it's like, I still haven't done it yet. I need to do it.
It's a professional tasting course. So you taste over 180 spirits over the course of 4 days, and then there's this big exam and you make drinks, and it's so intense to be thrown into like a pass fail situation. I passed,
yes,
which
is
great.
Cheers.
But it was really great to be able to take some time and really learn. And that's something I'm trying to integrate more into my daily routine too. And trying to find time to like really, I mean, we have so many brands.
Taste, I know.
We have so many brands. And so it's like, I need to keep constantly, and they're all, what's nice is my brands are all classics.
Yeah.
So they've all kind of been the same for a couple hundred years or so, which is nice, but I'm constantly, I meet people that tell me things about my brands every day.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea that's amazing. That's so cool. I didn't know that.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh my God, this little, I have a little puppy.
Guys, actually, we're going to have to end the episode up in a second.
Okay.
But first, we want to introduce you to my co-host
of
this
God.
Episode, who is, by the way, sitting in Aunt Louise's lap this entire time.
He's so cute.
His name is Rocky. We call him Little Dog.
If you're not watching, there's like the cutest little tiny, I think he's like the size of a
he's
shoe.
He's like 3.5 pounds.
Yeah, he's the tiniest little dog. He's sitting in my lap. He's been sleeping here this whole time.
A 7-month-old Yorkie. Beautiful, beautiful, fine, regal beast.
Yeah. I'm basically only going to come and do this podcast ever again if there's a small dog in my lap now.
Small dogs will be involved. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to drink all of Aunt Louise's beautiful, delicious products.
Aperol.
You know, you can hit her up. If you have any questions, you know, from this episode, you can hit her up on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, and she'll be more than happy to anything.
At Aunt Louise Marquis.
Yeah, or just post your question on YouTube, and then we'll be more than happy to answer it. Anyway, guys, thanks for tuning in. We hope you got something from it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for watching. We hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to click like, subscribe, or leave a comment below. Also, in case you missed it, the Bartender at Large documentary is now available for purchase online, and it's name your own price, so you can pay whatever you want for it. To pick up a copy, go to bartenderatlarge.com and click on the banner up top. Thank you so much for watching.